Satsang means the company of truth. And to be in satsang shows us how much love consciousness has for us. Because it drags us by the ear, as Maharaj has said, and brings us to the space. Any satsang, to hear the song of truth. That is how special satsang is. Someone asked me, how can you give peace to others? How can one give peace to others? How can the sun give sunlight? Its nature is to emit rays. To be at peace is to give peace. It is not an object to be given. There is no question in that sense of giving peace to others. Because peace is one's nature. If you are peaceful by nature, your presence will radiate peace. You have not acquired peace and then you are giving what you have acquired. The other day I read a beautiful simile in this book called A Course in Miracles. It said, when we look at a painting, do we admire the painting or the frame? The function of the frame is to hold the painting in place with which one looks at the painting. But what we admire is the painting. Similarly, the body is the frame, but that gets overlooked. We take people to be their bodies. We take ourselves to be a body. And then we start judging the frame. I like this frame, I don't like that frame. And our focus shifts from the painting to the frame. And we populate our vision with frames and only frames. If these bodies did not exist right now and you heard just voices, it would be very hard to point a finger at someone and say, you did this to me, and you did this to me. But this is the whole point, that the voice is actually one, which is the voice of consciousness. Ultimately, the voice is only one, and ultimately that voice is arising and subsiding in your own consciousness, nowhere else. So the shifting of the focus from the frame to the paintings is the deepening of the teaching. Or as the masters say, to see the one in the many. To see that one in the many is to be at peace. What is the fear of loss? It is to lose something what one has acquired. I am afraid to lose it. But one cannot lose what one is. You can lose what you have, you can lose what you acquire, But you cannot lose what you are. So who fears the loss? One is afraid to lose whatever one is identified with. That is why when you lose a loved one, you are far more affected than if you read in the papers about someone dying a tragic death. Because the one you have lost is mine. That is why in our scriptures it is said that the Devi sees all children equally as her own. They are all hers, not someone closer, someone further away. That is called seeing with an even vision. Understanding that it is the same consciousness which brings about whatever it is meant to, through whoever it does, is seen with even vision. Friends and folks, people you like, people you don't like. Then you stop seeing through the eyes of duality. That is called seeing with the single eye. If thine eye be single, thy whole body will be full of light, in the testament. Single eye is the eye of knowledge, of understanding. Thy whole body will be full of light is the light of consciousness, which is what you are. So there is no question of giving peace to others, and there is no question of losing peace, because peace is your nature. There is no question of others taking away your peace, because it cannot be given. One cannot blame someone else for taking away one's peace. I received a very interesting question the other day, obviously from someone who has delved deep into these spiritual teachings. So her question was, if one has accepted the transient nature of life and one is generally more at peace now than one was earlier, is there a difference between, let's say, a piece of chocolate which I wanted to have and I can no longer find, and losing someone one loves? In the sense, if one is rooted in the knowing that everything is transient, and the wish arose to have a piece of chocolate, but the chocolate is not there, and the transient nature of that is seen, and then we go to this extreme that someone we love, who was in our life, is not there, and the transient nature is seen. Is there a difference between the two? Or will one's reaction be the same? That, okay, this is the nature of life, let's move on. So the love for the chocolate is because of the pleasure it gives the sense of taste. So if the desire arises to have a piece of chocolate, one opens the fridge to see if the chocolate is available. And if it is not there, you say, ah, this desire was not meant to be fulfilled now. It is a pleasure dependent on a sense. Love is a deeper bond. The rivers of love are karmic in nature, generally. Now, what happens when one loses someone one loves? Most certainly grief will arise. We are human beings. It is our nature. But that grief will not be extended in the duration of time into mourning. Just as pursuing the desire for that chocolate will not arise beyond a point. In the sense that supposing the chocolate was not there in the fridge, I will look elsewhere in the house. If I really want it, I might go down to the store to get it. But if the store is closed, I might say, okay, I was not meant to have that piece of chocolate. The witnessing of the desire arises. Seeing whether the desire is fulfilled or not will arise. And whether it is fulfilled or not is God's will, is the understanding. And many of us relentlessly pursue our desires till we cause suffering for ourselves and others. Now, losing someone one loves, let's say you're going to the movies with some friends and the thought arises, my God, the last time I came here was with this loved one. Sadness will arise. Moments of sadness are bound to be there. But that will not be stretched into a story. I lost a loved one. I should not have. Why did God do this to me? How cruel is God? What have I done wrong to people that this has been my destiny? That dialogue of the thinking mind stops. In both cases, in the case of the chocolate and in the case of losing a loved one, the dialogue of the thinking mind stops. And the gift of the teaching is the end of the thinking mind. And living the teaching becomes meditating throughout the day. Maharaj was asked this question, is meditation necessary? And he was someone who would advocate meditation at least 2 hours a day. Abide in your beingness, he would say. So when he was asked, is meditation necessary? His answer was not yes. His answer was, meditation is not necessary if you are living the teaching of the Guru throughout the day. Because that is meditation. That is what I have added. Living the teaching is the meditation. Seeing everything that happens in your life from morning to night through the prism of the teaching is meditation. But sitting for meditation is a big help, even if it is half an hour. And in that half an hour, witnessing whatever arises, not wanting thoughts to stop, not trying to concentrate, because all these strengthen the me, but allowing whatever comes up to come up. If one is involved in a thought and one realizes later that, my God, I was involved in thinking, and the awareness comes back that I was involved in thinking, that is a very natural process. You did not do anything to cut off the involvement and bring it back to awareness. It may appear like that. Awareness cut off the involvement. You were involved. So if even half an hour is spent that way, then what happens is that starts trickling down into daily living, into what events transpire in the day. That is how that extends and permeates into daily living and becomes part of one's being. And following the words of the Guru at one level is the words of the actual Guru. But Guru is actually consciousness, which is not apart from you. Guru is a projection of one's own higher self onto a form which then sheds light back onto oneself. It is not apart from you. Someone asked me that, is it possible to have two gurus? Now at one level you can have as many gurus as you like. Dattatreya had 24 gurus, I think. You may pick up something different from one guru, something different from another guru. But if you have two gurus, you need to ask yourself one question. Where do I feel more at home? Where do I feel more at peace? Because if one was established in that peace, then even this doubt of which one is my guru would not arise. Because the risk of having many gurus is one is acquiring. acquiring from here. Whereas the function of the guru is a stripping away. So when do you feel that now I don't need to go anywhere else? That is a pointer. Now I'm tired. I want to rest in one place and hear my favorite song. So Jigar, where have you come from?
I come from Miller.
It's your first time here.
There was your while reading second time I saw your name and I searched in Mumbai. So I came to know that you were inside in Mumbai and talks of the book.
You enjoyed that book?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
And it's special. Has totally transformed my life.
That's beautiful. That is the purpose of a teaching. And as Vimalananda said, the test of a teaching is to see in the most extreme situations of life what happens.
Right.
See, he would say there's no point giving exams to children and telling them 1 month before you can start preparing for them. The surprise test is when you know how deep the knowledge has sunken in. And then when in one's own life one sees that now I view events differently from what I used to before being exposed to that teaching, then you know that yes, it has truly impacted me, not just at the level of knowledge. Then one knows one is living the teaching. It's like my teacher used the example of when you get your driving license. He would call that as awakening. You've got your driving license, you are qualified to drive. But it is only after 2 years of driving, one fine day, you realize you've driven through streets full of heavy traffic. And you say, my God, 2 years ago this would have really stressed me out. But now, I didn't really feel that to be so stressful. That is what he called deliverance, which are also concepts in Zen. Awakening and deliverance. Because an awakening which is just an awakening is no good. Awakening, functioning through daily living is the deliverance of the teacher. Ultimately, one cannot do anything to be present. Ultimately, you cannot do anything to be in the now because you recognize that you are the presence in which everything arises. What takes one away from the now is the thinking mind, which is either going into a dead past or an imaginary future, incessantly. When that is disengaged, where are you? But that book is so well structured, The Power of Now, because Eckhart works with the ego. Even my own guru would say, I work with the ego. There's no point telling the ego to kill itself, kill the ego, like many teachings do. Because how can the ego kill itself? So they embrace the ego. We can walk along a certain path through understanding. The goal is the same. Yes, Dipesh?
That's to kill an ego, you need the help of an ego.
Yeah, and he's not going to help you to kill himself. He will come through the back door. I remember reading an interview in Bombay Times of a Bollywood star, and the headline in big bold type was, I am very humble, in quotes. True humility is the absence of the person who thinks he is humble. That is the ego coming in through the back door. I am very humble. I. Like it's an attribute. Or as Rameshji would say, true humility is never recognized by the one who has it. He will not know it. And life is teaching us all the time lessons in humility. All the time. That was a nice mail you sent me.
See, as you said that, get back to the natural state, and there was something happened. I was aware, and I was losing it, and I reacted. was trying to stay very close to my breath. That's right. So that's one thing. And that's only I thought I could have moved away from the situation, maybe physically. That might have helped. So that's one thing that I think. Otherwise, after meeting you, the whole direction has been. And I'm very happy that this is live streaming, so we can. So before the next meeting, I might move for good to Australia. So this is so timely that probably from I've not reached contact because I was always thinking that if I could go, then how. And there is one more hope that there is somebody by the name Sailor Bob Adamson, who is in the deep temple.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So I'll try to find his. Because I'm moving for good, so I'll be. So this thing, and then watching him. I think this thing we can watch.
Yeah, they are testing it for.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully. And then maybe I'll. Trying to get my geography in D10 itself.
He's very elderly now.
Yeah, he's. Yeah. But he's before he. He's like 90 plus.
Wow. So what happens when this I reacted? It starts changing to a reaction happen. One should not be too hard on oneself. I just said the nature of consciousness is love because it has dragged you by the ear and brought you. Reaction. What to do? In the dream of life, reactions happen. We try our best. That's it. Whatever our definition of best is, not someone else's. And the teachings will be with you wherever you are. Once you have got exposed to it, it will chase you.
Absolutely.
Today the technologies are there to enable that to happen. It is what I call slow poison for the thinking mind. You've already been given the dose. You can go where you want now because it has gone into the system.
Ramesh used to say, no, forget my teaching.
Yeah.
Always.
Exactly.
Don't remember it.
Yeah. Allow the teaching to do its job. It's too late now. You can't undo it. It's too late.
Your acknowledgement on the email gave me the best talk to my boss, who's like the competency here. And most of you want to do it. So, you're saying. So, okay. Can you tell me what is it about? I don't know. I had the guts to talk to him, share him, because I think it's okay. But later, I assume. Because of the acknowledgement, I think the confidence is something that you know, I can talk about it with people who are maybe very high in otherwise.
Yeah, because they are people. But I hope your boss doesn't land up here and complain to me that because I said something, you went and did something.
Oh, no.
It can happen.
It can happen.
Then you have to say it wasn't me.
Sorry?
Then you say yes, you're right.
Exactly. Even Anoop has had some situations at work where I think probably seeing it through the prism of the teaching has.
Yeah. So again, you know, in these situations where the client used to flare up. Seniors would come up. There is usually only this fear, you know. Yeah. But now it's like,
chalta hai. That becomes with everything with life. Not in a sense of indifference, but it's in sense of I know that this is part of life. People are who they are, the way the divine has made them, in that sense.
Yeah, other thing to that is that. The opposite person might think you are indifferent to that situation.
Exactly, exactly.
They might think you are not motivated enough to
yes.
deal with it.
Correct, very well said. Yeah.
But then I think from your own point of view, this is exactly what's supposed to be at that time.
Absolutely.
And then you are at peace with that. So that judgment you know for the others have of you, that you don't want to engage with that thought process
yes.
anymore.
Exactly. I'll tell you when I was 23 and a half, I think, when I took over the family business, the ad agency. I was the youngest in my office. Everyone was older than me. And one day the receptionist buzzed my intercom. We had intercoms in those days, you know, inside the office. And she said, the client has come to see you. Shall I sentiment, and I was quite nervous because it was so intimidating, you know. So the client came and sat down, and I said, can I get you some tea or coffee? And all that was done. And he just kept quietly sitting. So I also kept sitting. So I said, so, you know, what is your requirement for your business? And he would just speak in 2-3 words, you know. We are in this business and that, but you just sit. So I said, no, I told myself, what do I do with this guy? You know? So I said, is there anything else? Can I help you with anything? He said, no, I'm just waiting for your boss to come. So it doesn't end there. So I told him, I said, excuse me, but you know, I've taken charge of things here. And he said, oh, you're too young. I don't think we can work together. And he left. So at that time, I was quite taken aback that, my God, even this is a criteria. You know, not seeing the level of competence, not seeing the experience of the staff in the IAM agency. But then with such episodes very early on in life, in my working career, I understood people are the way they are conditioned. It has got nothing to do with me as such. It is a circumstance, it is a situation, and people are being themselves. So from that point on, I learned so much through my working career about relationships with clients, with suppliers, with colleagues at work, that this ground of relationships which work provided me became the ground where I experienced the teaching. And then when I went to someone who said that daily living means relationships and relationships with the other, whoever the other may be, it was a direct fit onto my life's experience. So I saw everything through that prism. All your relationships in life are gifts, especially those which push your buttons. And if you come across a teacher who really pushes your buttons, then you must go back. Someone who came to me in the early days was so shocked and appalled when he heard what I spoke about that he thought I was mad, and he went and told his mother, this fellow is mad. And he has followed that teaching till today. And he says that it's the greatest gift because I started seeing things through that prism. And how do you know it's the greatest gift? By the level of peace which you feel. Because if you're more agitated after coming here or going to wherever you're going, then it is not doing its job. We did recently an interview on Shirdi Sai Baba for a YouTube channel called Sai Baba's Devotee Speaks, where I said, you know, Sai Baba performed so many miracles. But he kept saying, if you read the Sai Satcharita, that I give people what they want so that they may want what I actually want to give them. But we get hooked onto the miracles. And the greatest miracle is peace of mind in daily living. That's the greatest siddhi. I met one Baba recently on the tantric path. Very accomplished. But had a fight with his guru to prove which one had more siddhi.
After reading Power of Now, I have read other books also. I have attended some programs of Sadhguru also. So there is a question which I am carrying with me. I have not got answers today from any of the sources. That is, all these enlightened masters are with different kind of experience. As you mentioned about Tantric Karma, so I just came to that. Sadhguru is having a different kind of enlightenment experience. Heart is having it. Other person may be having different kind of experience. So Yogananda also different. So he can read your mind. That kind of power he carries. So is it like this? Every enlightened person is also having different variety of enlightenment experience. Or is it the one thing? It's ultimately the one thing. It's union with your divine self. But why it appears so that everyone the handwritten master.
Because they are all different people. Jesus was different from Lord Ram. It is bound to be. That is the nature of manifestation. That is why we have so many paths, so many ways. What is common, to use our own living example, is let's take our case, deep sleep. No matter what our paths are, what we do during the day, what our conditioning is, what our life circumstances, is my deep sleep different from yours? It cannot be. Degrees of sleep may be, but deep sleep, let's say impersonal consciousness, that does not matter. Impersonal consciousness in the deep sleep state and identified consciousness in the waking state and the dream state. And then anyone in this room would have their own experience. Even if they follow a particular teacher or guru, their experience will not be the same. It is your own journey. And a beautiful journey it is. Because when one tastes peace of mind, you will find it very hard if God came to you and said, now can I take it away? You are not going to give it away so easily. Because it is who you are. It will reflect on your face. People know we are very intelligent. If we are in the presence of someone we know who does not judge us, we just know it. And we feel comfortable in that presence. And that gives strength to people to even tap into that aspect themselves. You don't need to do anything to show your level of understanding or your level of enlightenment or your level of peace. You just have to be who you are. I had gone years ago to one program. It was in Bombay of, what do you call it? Anyway, it's a path of Kashmir Shaivism and Kundalini Yoga. And there was a lot of singing and chanting, which I enjoyed to a certain degree. But I did feel that, you know, this is not my path. That inner knowing was there. And towards the end of the program, one of the Swamis there, he was wearing this robe and he held my hand and took me aside. And he told me, which I am so grateful to him for, because you know, otherwise one can be very confused at the start of one's journey. He said, Beta, you don't need this. This is not for you. So then I said, Swamiji, can you give me some words of advice? And he said, you just be as you are, now you go from there. Which was so authentic and genuine of him to say that, rather than try and rope me in, and then, you know, I wonder whether is this the path, is that the path. So I was truly blessed that I didn't have that confusion which many people go through in the early stages of discovery, which is also part of the process. But for me, it was very straight and direct. But going forward, I would tell anyone that truly in your life, just stick to this one criteria, the word peace. Not as a label, but as a way of living. And you will know what you have found, where you have found it, what resonates with you, what you want to stay with, what you don't need to go after. You will know that. You have to trust that knowing. Trust and earnestness are very crucial. Thank you. Thank you.